So I wanted to talk today about child custody. This is a sugya that appears mostly really in the Gemara. Ksuvas daf kuf aleph amud beis, daf kuf beis amud aleph, a couple of other reference points that we'll mention. And there's a Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, Perek Chaf Aleph, Halacha Yud Zayin. It's really the main reference points of the halachic sugya, and it's a very the siman in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra siman pei beis. It's very halacha lemaisa, because whenever a couple gets divorced, they have to deal with these issues, and it's the type of issue that gets presented before Beis Din on a number of occasions. Even in the prenuptial agreement of the Beis Din of America, there's an option that parties can choose to have any issues relating to child custody or visitation presented to the Beis Din for a determination. And there have been a number of occasions in which the Beis Din has to deal with this issue. And the Medina de Machus issues regarding the extent of the jurisdiction of the Beis Din. Normally, when parties sign a shtar biruin to appear before the Beis Din, so the decision of the Beis Din is enforceable automatically. That's not necessarily the case when it comes to child custody issues, because there's a principle of parens patriae, that the courts are the guardians of the children, and therefore the parents don't have the right to give away the authority of decision-making to another tribunal. And therefore, in many states, even if parents have signed an arbitration agreement, or for purposes of a Beis Din, a shtar biruin, the courts will not honor or enforce that agreement if one side refuses to appear before the Beis Din. It also becomes an issue after the Beis Din issues its decision. Because if one side doesn't want to comply with the decision, then the enforcement mechanisms that are normally available for an arbitration court decision are not available in those states if one parent does not want to abide by the decision of the Beis Din. Nonetheless, api halacha, when there is a dispute, the parties are supposed to go to Beis Din, and even if it's not something that the courts will enforce, the parties should take upon themselves to abide by the decision of the Beis Din. From a secular law standpoint, what ends up happening in most of the cases that come before a Beis Din for arbitration in those states is what we call collaborative arbitration. What does collaborative arbitration mean? It means that there's a collaboration between the judges and the lawyers and the parties, that everybody agrees that they're going to kind of work together. And it will essentially, from a legal standpoint, be kind of like a mediation. You're going to work out an arrangement, but you're relying upon suggestions and recommendations and processes that you're comfortable with, and everyone collaborates to agree that they'll make it enforceable. That when the Beis Din issues its recommendation or determination, that the lawyers will sit down and they will incorporate that determination into a signed divorce agreement between the parties. And if the parties themselves sign a divorce agreement, that is given the status of presumptive validity by the courts and will generally be upheld. The magic words from the court's perspective in terms of honoring agreements between the parties when it comes to child custody is that it has to appear to be in the best interests of the child or of the children. That's what we call the best interests test. And there's much halakhic literature on whether or not halacha also agrees with this standard and principle of best interests. Is that what the totality of the Mekoros indicates, that halacha also agrees that you have to make a determination of what's in the best interests of the child, And if that is the case, then that helps to alleviate some of the potential tension, because at least the courts can have a comfort level that the Bati Din are following essentially the same standard that they prescribe. With respect to the Rabbanut courts in Eretz Yisrael, there are a number of statements in Piskei Din or Rabbanim over the years where they say explicitly that this is the standard that they employ, this is the terminology that they employ. Rabbi Eliezer Goldschmidt has this in Psak Din from several decades ago, that we follow what is Latova Sayelet, what is Latova Sahayulodim. So this is, you know, part of the analysis. Some writers have written articles about where they divide the Rishonim, the Achronim, into two different camps. Ah, this camp holds that there's an absolute standard of some sort. The other camp holds that there's a best interest standard. You actually look at the Mekoros, very hard to ascertain that anybody is arguing with each other. There seems to just be a recognition that there are various Mekoros and a question of how you apply the Mekoros in every single given case. And the Mekoros themselves indicate that, of course, all of the standards that are present in the halacha are premised upon what's in the best interest of the children. But best interests is defined a certain way, api halacha, that we have actual definitions as to, you know, what types of considerations to take into place when it comes to a best interest determination. So the starting point is the Gemara in Ksuvos on Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Beis, and the Gemara there talks about a case of a woman. The Mishnah starts off talking about Anose Yaseisha Upaski Imo Kadeshi Yazan Es Bita Chame Shanim. Then he should not say this. Says la'achir upaska imo kedei sheyozun as bita chameishonim chayev lezuno chameishon. Husband who took upon himself that he's going to take care of the woman's daughter. Rashi says shehayola miisha achir. She had from a different husband. He has to do so even after they get divorced. Lo yamar rishon, the one who took upon himself this obligation, should not say the kashetavo etzli azuna. If she comes to me, I will feed her. Rather, he should bring the mizonos, he should bring the food that he's promised to bring to her daughter, to the place where she is situated. So the Gemara says that on this Mishnah, my love, that we are talking about. Hold on 1 second. Let me just skip. Excuse me. The Gemara in Kuf Beis Amud Beis talks about this Mishnah. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Chista, Zosomeres Abas Eitzel Ima." We see from here that a daughter stays with the mother. Daughter stays with the mother. So this seems to be an absolute statement. Meaning what? Meaning that there is no chiluk whether she is a ketana or whether she's a gedola, that even if we understand if she's a ketana, the mother has to be mimetapelet with her, she has to nurse her. Even afterwards, a young child needs their mother. The Gemara in Perek Afa Pi, in Dafa Samach E Amud Beis, says that a father has an obligation to feed his sons and daughters until they are 6 years old, that they are not able to be out on their own. And Rashi says, "She'adayin utzarach li'imo," whether I'm talking about a daughter, whether I'm talking about a son, they can't really be on their own. They need to be with their mother. So I understand that any child who is up to age of six, this is the Gemara in Eberbin also, on Daf Pei Beis, Amud Beis, says, has the din of Ravasi, that a ben is Yotze be'Eruv Imo, that a son is Yotze with his mother's Eruv. Let's say she makes an Eruv Techumen, so it's presumed to apply to the son,
until the age of six. By the way, the age of six is clear from the sugya there, and the way that it's codified la halacha in the Siman Taf Yud Dalid in Hilchos Erevin means until their birthday party when they turn 6 years old. After that, we may call them six in the American vernacular. They're called six until their seventh birthday, but for purposes of this halacha, they're already out of the parsha. You say ad she shadim, it means until their sixth birthday party. But the entire year that they call them 6 years old, they're already beyond this age. But for that period of time, so it's understood that a person needs their mother. But from our Mishnah of Chista derives that a daughter is always going to be with her mother. Whatever the din is with a son, a daughter is always going to be with a mother. So the Gemara says, Mimai de Bigdola askinan, de Mimbiktana askinan. Maybe we're talking about a katana. And the Gemara says, and maybe it's only because we're afraid that if she is with the father, the father, let's say, is maybe a case where we'd be dealing with, say, the father's estate, and she would be with the yorshim of the father, then we're afraid that they're going to kill her. Because there was a case where a father died, and then he left a ben katan, he had yorshim. Maybe they were brothers among another marriage. Maybe they were his own brothers. This child was a threat because he was going to take the Yerusha. Let's say that a man dies and he leaves the ben katan to that the it's only the ben to the mother. The yarshim of the father say, let him grow up with us. Mother says, let him grow up with me. So then we have him grow up with the mother. The mother is the one who raises him. Because there was a maisa shahaya that they left him in the care of the father's yarshim, and they said what do we need this little whippersnapper to take away our inheritance? And they slayed him.
What's the word?
Erev Harishon. For those who want to say, it's not Erev Harishon. It's Erev Harishon. Okay, so it's Ayin Reshe in the Gemara. It looks like Erev Harishon. But presumably they didn't want to be on their worst behavior right before Seder Simei Tshuva. It's Erev Harishon. So im kein litni lamakom shehi. So the Gemara says, no. If it would only be talking about ketanim, then we would say lamakom shehi, meaning that a ketana is in one place where she's, always going to be in one location. A gedola will already be out there, perhaps in a different location. My lamakom sheimo. Why does it say the place where the mother is? Shmas mina bas eitz leim lo shna gedola v'lo shna ketana. This teaches me that no, we're looking at the mother. That the daughter follows the mother wherever the mother is. That's where the daughter is. Doesn't matter whether it's a gedola. Doesn't matter whether it's a ketana. Rashi says a loshon that subject to much debate. Rashi says diktani milsa psikasa. From the fact that it just says makam she'ima, just go to the mother, shema minah kol bas eitz leim. This teaches me that every single daughter goes to the mother. So what do we see? We see there was an assumption that katana, I would take, more or less for granted. The Gemara speaks about maisa shahaya that indicates that when a man dies, at least when he has a son, it might not be a good idea for the son to go to the yorshim as opposed to the mother, and even a son in such a circumstance should go to the mother. The Gemara indicates that with daughters, even if she's a gedola, she should be with the mother. That's all that emerges from the Gemara. But the Gemara, despite the fact that it is not that it's talking about a Mishnah that wasn't talking about the Misa of the father, somehow the Gemara gets into a discussion about a case where the father dies based on this Braisa that it quotes, And therefore, the final halacha might be understood as only talking about a case where the father dies. So the Rosh quotes a machlokis about this. The Rosh in the sugya quotes a yesh omim. Then he quotes the opinion of the Rama. The yesh omim says we're only talking about an omana. But if we're talking about a grusha, so then even a daughter goes to the father. And the Rama says, no, the sugya here is not, even though there's a brisa that's brought that deals with a case where the father died, the sugya intrinsically is not just talking about an amana. Since the sugya intrinsically is not talking about an amana, the maskan of the Gemara is talking about bein melmana, bein begrusha, that we would have the daughter, who is, doesn't matter whether she's a katana or whether she's a gedola, she would be with the mother. Now, we already quoted the Gemara in Ksuvos on Samachay and the Gemara in Erevin on Daf Pei Beis. The Gemara there says, why is a katan yotze be'erevimo? Because katan b'tzavsa di'ima nichale, a katan prefers to be in the company of his mother. A little bit of a question that Rashi in Ksuvos, when he quotes this din of an Eruv, of the Katan bin Yosei with the Eruv of his mother, quotes a case where the father makes an Eruv and the mother makes an Eruv and says that we assume that the Eruv Tchumen that the child prefers is the one that's with the mother as opposed to the father. If you look at the din in Eruvin, some machlokas there, Ravasi, of Yoshua, as to whether we're only talking about such a case, whether it means that there's a preference to the mother as opposed to the father, or whether it means that even if the father didn't make an Eruv, and there was no Zikoi, and the mother wasn't even Mezake the child, that there's like an automatic Zikoi, and the Gemara indicates that that's how we paskin, and that's the halacha, the straight halacha as it appears in Shulchan Aruch as well. A little bit of akasha as to why Rashi only gives that that hechi timtza. But either way, the Rambam takes all of these Gemaras, and the Rambam paskins that up until the age of six, the son is with the son and the daughter are both with the mother, and then after the age of six, the daughter stays with the mother, and the father. The Rambam's lashon is that the father says, "If you if he wants mizonos from me, then you better give him over to me because I'm not going to give him any more mizonos if you're going to keep him in with yourself." So a little bit of scratching of the head over here. What does the Rambam mean by that? So Rambam mean that the mother has an option. She wants, she can give up the son to the father, and if she want, and not worry about mizonos, because the son will be with the father, or but if she wants, I'm sorry, but if the mother wants, she can keep the son and just take care of him herself. Or does the Rama mean, no, that, of course, he's just kind of saying that it's obvious that the son's supposed to go to the father, and that's just the way he puts it. So the Rama has this halacha in the context of the Chi of Hanukkah, that a mother is supposed to nurse her child. After she's divorced, she doesn't have a Chi of Hanukkah anymore. If she didn't start with being Menika, the child, and it doesn't create a Sakana, she doesn't have to start afterwards. And in the Shulchan Aruch, Piskei Tshuva, the Shulchan Aruch and the Piskei Tshuva talk about all kinds of scenarios where the you want to goad the mother into doing it because you can't find anybody else to do it. And finally, it's the final psak Piskei Tshuva quotes is that even if there's no sakana per se, because she started nursing with the mother, but if you can't find anything else, anybody else to do it, then you force the mother to do it, and you pay her for it. And if you don't have money to pay her for it, so you force her to form tzedakah. And even if she's an aniya, she's an ashira when it comes to being able to give milk. She has plenty of milk, so in that regard, we consider her to be an ashira, so we can impose a chiyuv tzedakah upon her. So the Rambam's lashon is Shamu chadoshu gemalasil imatzam egoreshes she had bina etzleim afishin also mimena ad she had ben sheishanim gemuros elakofin esav ibinosin lomizonos uetzlimo. So it sounds like from the ratio of the Rambam ad she had ben sheishanim gemuros. Then mafishin also mimena. Then we forcibly take her away from the father, or take him away from the mother, and bring him to the father. After 6 years, the father can say, "I'll only give mizonos if he's with me." But if he's with the mother, then I'm not going to give anything. And the daughter is with the mother forever, even after 6 years. So the Ma'arival and the Ma'arav Ma'alshich, in fact, understand the ikar of the Rambam is not the ratio, but is the sefer. And the deal from the Sefer is that if the mother wants, she could say, "I'm not giving up my son. Don't worry, I don't need your mizonos. I'll take care of him myself." Even if the father screams and cries, "I want the son to come to me." And the Beis Shmuel, the Chelkas Mechokek, look over here in Beis Shmuel, Sifkat and Tes, says that don't undo the Rambam. Magi Mishnah says this too, based on a diuk cholush of the sefer. The pashtus is like the resha, that the father should go to the son, should go to the father after the son is 6 years old. And there's another consideration as to why this should be, and this is where we get to the best interest test. There's a tshuva of the Rashba. It's Miucheses Ramban. It's Tshuva Lamin Ches. So you figure the Rashba wrote enough Tshuvas, he doesn't have to take away the Ramban's Tshuvas too, but it doesn't matter. The Tshuva of the Ramban is still Miucheses Rashba, Simon Lamin Ches of that particular collection. And in that particular Tshuva, it's talking about a little bit of a dispute. The father had died. The Apotropsim, who had been appointed to take care of the Yisomim, the little boys, say, they're presumably above the age of 6 already, say, "We don't want to take care of them unless they come to us." And the mother says, no, I want them to stay with me." The Shaila came to the Rashba, and the Rashba says, that here are the principles that you follow. Habas liyola meitzelein. They say, even if the mother gets remarried, still gets to keep her daughter from previous marriage. Lo shna gedoy lo ketana, kedisa perakanosek, we haven't daf kuf beis amin beis. Behatam, but it gives a reason for this. Kedei shetagya la'em lebas, so that, because it's in the best interests of the daughter. V'telam de derech noshim, that the mother's going to teach her the ways of Jewish young ladies. That she shouldn't go the way of pritzus, she should learn ways of snius. Who is she going to learn ways of snius from? Her mother. Aval habein. But when it comes to the son, above 6, doesn't say above 6. You should have to read words that he doesn't say. Aval habein. Yoter roi lios etzel hanashim akrovim. It's more appropriate for the bein to be with his the krovim, the relatives. The question, what to do with the Gemara? Aren't we afraid the relatives are going to kill him? So there, it depends. There are all kinds of exceptions to the rule. If they're not relatives who would be Yorish, then you don't have to worry about it. If he's not a Katan and he can fend for himself, you don't have to worry about it. The Be'er Heiter brings all kinds of other exceptions. If it is a relative who would be Yorish, but the relative renounces any Yerusha, so then you don't have to worry about it. You certainly don't have to worry about it in the context of a divorce case, and Lemaise, you're not worried that the father's going to kill him. It's in the context that where there's no Yerusha to be divided, so most of the cases where the issue is deliberated is in divorce cases, so the whole Shema Yargu consideration, which is really largely, mostly, or completely discounted by Poskim, really, it doesn't come up in the cases that are actually relevant. Shehem yagilu vilamdu derech halimud. So why is it important for him to be with the father's relatives, and presumably the same applies to the father himself? So they'll teach Torah. V'derech hanashim yotim ineim. It's the men who teach the Torah. Shebnei almana darkam derech zar li olam sarach l'daktek bechlal l'dvarim elu. And that's why you have to be very, very careful in these matters. Achar mashiyira beinei bezdim chomokom mokom sheyesh bar yotir tikun liyosomim shebezdin abiyim shal yosomim lakso achar tikunim. He says, since the whole thing is that we're trying to take care of them, we want the daughter to be taught Dachei Tznius, we want the son to be taught Torah, so you have to, in every single case, figure out what's going to create the greatest tikkun. Seems to indicate that there might be some flexibility in a case where it's determined that there will be greater tikkun for a son to stay with a mother, for a daughter to stay with a father or the father's relatives. No, if there would be greater tikkun in order to accomplish our goals of the best interests of the children, his case, the children were Yisomim, but the same svara would apply if they are children where their parents are alive. If they're children where the parents can't provide them what they need, that's what we call Yisomim b'chayei avim. That they would still have a din of Yisomim in the sense the parents patriae principle, that they wouldn't have if the people who are supposed, the parents who are supposed to take care of them properly are not able to take care of them properly. So this Rashba is Miuchaset Ramban is what is quoted as being our best earliest source for the best interest of the child test. Rav Ezra Batsri in his Sefer and Hilchos Ishus has a parak on Hachzakas Yiladim, and he says that the rules that are set forth by the Rambam are generally understood when the husband and wife are on the same level, and you have to make your determinations, all else being equal. So all else being equal, so you make the divisions based on what the Gemara indicates, combination of the Gemara at the end of Ksuvos and the Gemara in Samachem and Beis in Ksuvos and Erev in Daf Pei Beis Amud Beis, that up until six, everyone's with the mother, and afterwards, sons are with the father, and daughters are with the mother. But it's all flexible if they're not in Ba'osa Darga. I would say it a little bit differently. Not that this is the same when the father and mother are both equally capable. This is the halacha when the father and mother are capable of fulfilling the functions that we expect them to perform at the various ages. That the mother is capable of taking care of the basic physical and nurturing and nourishing needs of both sons and daughters until the age of six. The father is capable of giving a proper Torah education to sons after the age of six, more so than the mother. Both he's capable and he's more capable than the mother. And the mother is capable and more capable than the father of raising the daughters with respect to Dachei Tznius, with respect to teaching them the ways of Tznius. It's the way that I think really emerges thus far from the sugya. So based on these principles, there are a number of tshuvos that talk about what if it's not the case? What if I have an Isha who's a prutza? She's with other men, and she's getting pregnant from other men, living with other men. So then, the Radbaz is a tshuva, Chelek Aleph, Simen Reish Sama Gimel, in which he says that it's better for the daughter under those circumstances not to be with the mother. If the mother is conducting herself in such a prutza, improper fashion, so she shouldn't be with the mother. If there's a father in the picture, she would go to the father. His case was a case of divorce, where he said that the daughter should be taken away and brought to the father, because he'll be able to teach her tznius better than the mother, who is completely licentious. In the event that the father is not alive, says the Radbaz, so then you give it to relatives of the father. And if the father doesn't have relatives, so then you find other custodians. But you don't leave her with a mother who is objectively not capable of teaching her ways of tznius. Similarly, the Nachlas Tzvi of Gedalia Felder deals with a case where a child had, in the other direction, a son had been with the mother up until the age of six, and the father says, okay, child 6 years old, I want my son. And Rabbi Gedalia Felder says, well, in this case, the child was a little bit developmentally slow, not necessarily a severe case, but had some learning issues. And the psychologists in the case, they consulted with the mumchin, came to the conclusion that the child's welfare would better be served by being with the mother. In other words, where even the basic needs that normally are considered to last only until age six isn't an absolute window. It's not a, it's an estimation. Normally it lasts until six. But in this case, where it was felt by the experts that the child really needed the tzapsa, the ima, needed to be with the mother for a longer period of time, so that should be followed. Similarly, Batsri says, if I have a father who's a Baal Averos, he's an incorrigible gambler or philanderer or has other problems, so he's not going to give the best Torah education to a son. And in such a case, you would give to a mother. Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Tesvav, Siman Nun, deals with a case where the mother is a prutza, and she had two children, two sons. One was 7.5 years old, and one was, 4.5 years old. And the Tzitz Eliezer says that, never mind the fact that the presumption is that the 7.5 goes to the father anyway, the 4.5-year-old should also go to the father. The truth of the matter is that even the Rambam's assumption that based on this kind of idea of tzavsa, b'tzavsa, d'ima, nichole, that the sons up until the age of six would go to the father, so that's not really spelled out. The Gemara in Ksuva, Staf Kor Beis, Amud Beis, which is the only Gemara that really deals explicitly with a custodial issue, is dealing with daughters, doesn't deal with sons at all. The Ravid says, if the son is with the mother, how is he going to learn Torah properly? You think a child before the age of six doesn't have to know Baba Basra by heart? You want the art school book to be written about, you know, your child, so he should get started early. And he's not going to learn Torah properly unless he's with his father. So on that kasha of the Ravid, that sheet of the Ravid, the Magen Mishnah defends the Rambam. The Magen Mishnah says, what is a child going to learn before the age of six? So learn the basics. Torah Tziva Lada Moshe, Marasha Kilas Yaakov. For the basics, the Shema Yisrael, the Brachos, the father presumably is not going to be completely absent from the child's life. The father is going to come around. Say they're divorced, they're not going to live under the same roof, but there'll be something which is introduced by the Magen Mishnah as a halakha category of visitation. The Magen Mishnah introduces this category of visitation, that is assumed that the father will have access, that he will come in at various intervals, and during those intervals, he'll be able to provide the Torah education that the child needs. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Lashon of the Rambam, with respect to when the sons and the daughters are with the mother, and then what happens when they're above the age of six. And the Vilna Gaon mentions that you shouldn't completely discount the opinion of the Ravid. The Ravid has legitimacy to what he's saying, and it's something which certainly, since the Gemara quotes it, should be nechnas l'tocha cheshbon. And therefore, in the Tzitz Eliezer's case, where the son was 4.5 years old and wasn't getting a proper Torah education with the mother, and the visitations of the father was not really sufficient to offset the preetzus that the child was witnessing, it was appropriate, certainly taking the Rabban into consideration, that the 4.5-year-old son should go to the father. But what if the mother wants to leave the city before the age of six? She says, look, I have the custodial rights prior to the age of six, and therefore I can live wherever I want. So I'm going to take my children, whether it's my daughters or whether it's my sons, who are not 6 years old. She could make the argument with sons who are below the age of six, or daughters, whether they're below the age of six or above the age of six, and I want to move far away. Based on and this idea of visitation and access of the Father, the poskim are not so excited about this. The Noda B'Yehuda, quoted in the Piskei Tshuva, has a case where the mother wanted to take or took the son outside of the city. You know, the Yehuda said, in such a case, we don't say that the child can be with the mother because the father's not going to have access to teach him Torah. Minchas Yitzchak points out, the Noda B'Yehuda, I think it's in, I'll give you the Maror Malkum. I didn't write down in my notes the it's quoted in the Piskei Tshuva. You can find it in the Piskei Tshuva. So he says that in such a case, the father has the right to insist that the son be with him. And Chas Yitzchak points out that if you look at the different shitos, there are two out of three shitos that would keep a son below the age of six with the father. Because one shita is the Yesh Omim and the Rosh that says that in a divorce case, even the daughters are with the father. Because after all, remember, the father is the one who has the responsibility of mizonos. Up until the age of six, who has the responsibility for mizonos? It's the father. He has to be zon and the banav uvenosav akatanim. So he says he has all the responsibility. Shulchan Aruch paskins, if the mother says, I don't want the children, she has the right to say, I don't want the children. The only time that we would ever force a child upon her is if there would be a sakana for the vlad because she's interrupting the nursing, or if nobody else is available to nurse, so we'll force her to do the nursing. But other than that, Din Mefurish and Shulchan Aruch, the mother can say, she can be mashlich the children. She could say, I'm not taking care of the children and give them over to the father. So the Minchas Yitzchak, this is in Chelek Zayin and Simon Kuf Yud Gimel, the Minchas Yitzchak points out, you have the Yesh Omim who say that in a divorce case, even the daughters go to the father. You have the Ravid who says that, okay, the daughters go to the mother, but the sons, even below the age of six, go to the father. And you have one Shita, the Rambam, who says that the son goes to the mother. But even that, says the Magen Mishnah, is premised upon the assumption that there'll be visitation, that the mother's not going to take the son, who's below the age of six, far away, so that the father is not going to have access. So the Minchas Yitzchak has such a case where the father was in Brooklyn, and the mother was in L.A., and the Minchas Yitzchak said she has no right to take the son far away from the father, and therefore in this case we're going to remove the son who is below the age of six from the mother's custody, who is paskening on the case, and move the child to the father's custody, so that the father would be able to bring him up properly in the ways of Torah. He also wasn't so excited about the mother's lifestyle. The Batsvi gives a cautionary note. The tone and tenor of some of the tshuvos is the mother's a prutza and she's not keeping Shabbos properly. I'm sure in all the tshuvos they were mivara, there seems to be a prevalence of cases where the father is mamash at tzaddik yisod olam. So the Batsri warns, he says, in my experience, this is an area where you have to be particularly scrupulous about, number one, evu mesunim bedin, and number two, shiyu beinecha kirishoyim. That when they come in front of you, he says, the fact that they put on a good show in front of the Beis Din with Haredi clothing and a good presentation of how frum they are and how Torah-oriented they are, said that the best starting point is to assume that nobody is telling the truth, and you should be extremely circumspect when people make these representations. They know that it will stand them well in front of the Beis Din, but it's not necessarily the truth. He gives just that very important cautionary note.
Nachat now, Tzvi.
Sorry?
Nachat Tzvi's kind of the case.
Yeah.
Spoke about where the son was a little slow developing. Would it ever be shy for the father to say, oh, my son, I know he's four, I know he's five, but he's really independent child. I want him by me.
So it's... it's difficult if the child himself indicates a comfort level with the mother. He really has a tremendous burden of proof. Also, the question is, what are we looking to accomplish when we speak about best interests? We have to focus on what the child needs. So the best interest test seems to be up until age six. What the child needs is good physical care and nurturing and nourishing, which we assume comes best with the mother, with a certain amount of father involvement for teaching Torah. Past the age of six, we assume for the son needs primarily an atmosphere where he's going to grow in his Torah, learning and mitzvot and so forth. And the daughter needs primarily an atmosphere in which she's going to grow in her sensitivity of tznius to be a proper Bas Yisrael. So I think that whatever argument is going to be made, maturity, non-maturity, it should apipashtus fall into those categories of how are we best promoting those objectives. Yes, we are, because we're assuming that the son is going at that age. He's constantly crying. He wants to be with his mother. My children, until they reach the age of six, I even have a seven-year-old who's still a little bit like this. They wake up in the morning. They say ima ima. They want their mommy. They want to spend quality time with their mommy. They want to go wherever their ima goes. It's a physical dependence. So I think if you look in Shulchan Aruch, Taf Yud Daled, the Mishnah Berurah, brings these various shitos, over there in the context of Erevin. Again, I don't know that we make a complete identification and comparison, but that's something to bear in mind. Okay, so again, if the child is of an age in which they don't need that physical nurturing and nourishing, so that would be part of the cheshbon. Now, if particularly, I guess according to the Minchas Yitzchak, where you have all these other considerations, where according to Rov Hashitos, the father has a strong claim anyway. Now, let's say that's with respect to the mother taking the son out of the vicinity. What if the mother wants to take the daughter? There, you don't have the Magen Mishnah. You have the Minchas Yitzchak writes just as a matter of svara, that just like we assume that a father should have visitation with a child, particularly a young son, so there should be visitation in all cases. Whenever the child is with one parent, the other parent should have visitation. In his case, he says the child should be brought from Los Angeles to Brooklyn. So he says, but of course, you have to establish proper visitation for the mother. Again, that's just a kind of extrapolation from the Magen Mishnah. But with the daughter, you don't have the explicit statement that the father needs to be there to teach her Torah. So can the mother take the daughter, away to a different location? So that's a machlokis. Marival says yes. Marishdam says no. And it's only reasonable the father is the one taking care of them. He should have access to the children he's taking care of. So some want to read into any comparisons between being zan and having custodial rights that whatever shitos express that argument are more kind of in the camp that it's an absolute right rather than a best interest test. I'll be honest, I didn't see it. I didn't see it. Even those who express those types of arguments are very, very adamant about how the focus is on the schus habas and the schus habein, it's schus habas that the father should spend some time with her. So I know that it's neat to draw that distinction, but I partially didn't see it. He quotes so the Maharam Biton says that since it's a machlokis ladina, if the mother already took the daughter, we wouldn't force the mother to give the daughter back. Since Eliezer has a case where the daughter is above the age of six, living in the same city, and doesn't like her father, doesn't want to spend any time with the father, and since Eliezer, to summarize the tshuva in one line, it's a pox on her head, It says the daughter doesn't want to see her father, so good, so then she just lost her mizonos. So you can argue that's new. Similar to Lashon Rambam, says that the son doesn't want to go to his father after he's 6 years old unless he's an onus. So the father doesn't have to give mizonos. But the Tzitz Eliezer feels very strongly, and he sat on a bezdin that heard this particular case. There's a footnote to his tshuva. This is in Chelek Tezayin, I believe. I didn't write down the tshuva. I think it was in Chelek Tezayin. I have it with me if you want the citation. And as a sort of a, not a footnote, an addendum to his tshuva is the concurrence of Avaya Yosef. And Avaya Yosef says that he thinks that this is dependent on the machlokes between the Maharibal and the Maharshdam. But because he says the preponderance of the poskim are really like the Maharshdam, therefore he agrees with the psak of the Tzitz Eliezer. And the Tzitz Eliezer then adds a footnote after the published concurrence of Avaya Yosef, in which he says that whether you agree with the Maharibal or Maharshdam, or the Maharam Biton, that if the mother has taken the child, she doesn't have to necessarily return her. He says that in this particular case, where we're not arguing about whether she's going to go to the father, but just whether he's obligated to give her mizonos, he says he thinks everybody would agree that in such a case, he wouldn't be obligated to give mizonos. It's a little bit of a question. As to whether the mizonos could really be withheld as a punishment for what's not really a custodial dispute, but what's a visitation dispute. I don't see anybody focus on that issue. I mean, here, Leisman de Polig, you know, assuming that there are other considerations, it wasn't, you know, part of the argument, you know, per se, that the daughter should be with the father because the mother's a prutza or anything like that. If the daughter has a legitimate right to be with the mother from a custodial perspective, and all they're arguing about is the father's custodial rights towards his daughter, visitation rights towards his daughter, which is not, which doesn't have a clear marker anyway. I think it's a little bit difficult to argue that whatever mizonos obligation he would have had, it would only be mitam stoka anyway, maybe mitam takana from the Rabbanut after the age of six, that would be taken away simply because visitation was being withheld. No, I thought it's a little bit, to be honest, of a tzarech yin. The Radbaz also has a case where he writes strongly against an almana who wanted to take her daughters to live in a different location. But his case was talking about where it was an almana case. As I mentioned, he said that since the apotropsim were given a certain achrayus to look over their welfare, they were appointed as apotropsim, so therefore they won't be able to exercise their achrayus properly. And he had all kinds of other arguments too, sakanas drachim, that they were very, very young, and there'd be sakanas drachim to take them away into different locations. But one of the arguments was the there's a benefit in terms of having sort of the exposure to the father's family. So mitzad that argument, that would be true, you know, certainly in any case, whether there would be sakanas drachim or whether there wouldn't be sakanas drachim. The Maharshdam in making the argument that there is a makor, he finds he's the only one, I think, who really found some sort of a makor to argue that we have a clear basis that the children shouldn't be taken, or the daughter should not be taken away from the father. Pointed out that there is a stira between the Rambam's lashon in Perek Chof Aleph of Hilchos Ishus and in Perek Chof Gimel of Hilchos Ishus. So let me just pull out the Maharshdam so I can read it. Okay, so he points out that in Perek Chaf Gimel, where the Rambam is talking about the father's obligation to take care of the daughter that the wife had from a different marriage. So the Rambam says he's obligated to bring the mazonos lemakom she he sham ima, the place where there is situated the mother. While in Perek Chaf Aleph, when he talks about how the daughters stay with the mother, it says that habas eitzel ima, that the daughter is next to the mother. But he doesn't say the makam shehi sham ima. So he says the fact that the Rambam doesn't say the makam shehi sham ima means it's understood she's in the vicinity. She's in town. She's not taking away his daughters from him. It's only when it's the daughters from somebody else that we say lamakam shehi sham ima, that the assumption is that it's perfectly legitimate for the mother to go away somewhere else. But otherwise, we don't have the assumption that the mother can go away somewhere else. And the others argue based on Rashi, the Shita of the Ma'aribal, for example, if we give the mother the right, would say that if you looked at Rashi, that has in the sugya here in Ksuvos, that we say that the makam sheima, that's true, it doesn't use the word sham, it says the makam sheima, that we bring the daughter to the place, the makam sheima, in the case where the father died and there's a dispute whether the daughter should go to the mother or to the relatives. So Rashi says diktani milsa psikasa, whether it says an absolute non a qualified statement that the daughter goes absolutely to the mother. So he says absolute means absolute. That means that the mother can take the child elsewhere. Let's say no, if it meant that it was completely absolute, so then it would be absolute in cases where it was Bal Korcha, and we don't find that it's where the mother wants to give up the daughter, where the mother says, please take the daughter, I don't want the daughter, that we would force the mother to keep the daughter, but we don't find that we force the mother. It's halacha psuka, that everyone agrees the mother can give up the daughter to the son and to others if she wants to. So therefore, you have to qualify it. And since it says Shema Mina, after Rashi says the Tani Milsa Psikas, it says Shema Mina, Korbas Eitzelaim, that the Shema Mina is that Korbas Eitzelaim. The Milsa Psikas is on the Korbas, Kor, whether she's a Tana, whether she's a Gedola. It's not on the Mokom, not on whether she's here or whether she's there. That it's talking about a very, very specific aspect of where we have an unqualified rule. So that's a part of the Diyun with respect to this point, but to that degree, we do have a marker, at least for the different opinions, even if it's not a clear cut marker. But again, you could bring an argument either way from that Rashi. Again, whether your focus is on the first part of Rashi, or whether your focus is on the second part of Rashi. Okay, so the next, just a couple of other issues that arise that I'll try to cover is number one: do we have a preference if it turns out a father or mother are not available or are not qualified? So, do we have a preference with respect to the grandparents? Do the grandparents have any kind of a mausa in this regard? There seems to be a couple of different approaches. There seems to be a general agreement that if the father's not available, then the grandfather is better than the mother, meaning the father's father, the paternal grandfather. Because what's the main purpose of the father raising the son after the age of six? It's teaching Torah. We have a pasuk of the Tamla Vanecha Livnei Vanecha Yom Asher Amarta Lefnei Hashem Elokecha B'Sinai, that there is a chiyuv or an inyan of a grandfather teaching a grandson Torah. So just like that would militate in favor of giving to the father, it would militate to giving to the grandfather in such circumstances. The Ramah quotes from the Maharam Padova, that if there is a case where the daughter would be better off not being with the mother, sounds the Maharam Padova is talking about from physical considerations. That just, you know, he said that there's a benefit of her being with the mother in part because of just the physical environment. So if just the father is able to provide a much more nurturing physical environment, so then she should be with Eitzel Beis Aviv. It's talking, he was the Maharam Padova, happened to be talking about an Almana. But the Nosei Kelim say, if there's a case of Grusha, so then the same would apply to the father. And when we talk about Beis Aviv, so Api Pashtus, that means if the father's not around, it would go to the father's father. The Mabit also says that if there's no father, then the sons go to the father's father. So the second consideration is, what if there's no father? Is there a preference of going to the mother's of the mother's mother? The Ramah indicates that somebody have a Shulchan Aruch. I'll read it in the Ramah over here. Okay, excuse me. So the Ramah indicates that I'm sorry. The Ramah is in Sif Zion. Okay. Mesa ha'aim ain ima yichol alakov shiu b'habanim ima. If the mother dies, so then there is not an automatic right to go to the mother's mother. So in this respect, the mother's mother is not given quite the same status as the father's father when it comes to a son above the age of six. And the Chilkas Mechokek writes over there, to hear near at the Heinuka Sha'av Kayim, that's when the father is alive. But if the father is not alive, then there would be an Eloi for the mother's mother rather than other relatives of the father for the daughter who is for the daughter to go to her, and also the sons up until the age of six, whatever rights or whatever preferences would have existed in favor of the mother would then go over to the mother's mother, but only in the case where there is not a father. With respect to the Radvaz also says that similar to the Nachlas Tzvi, that if you have a son who's a chole, so maybe then there is a preference to keeping the child with the mother. He's not talking about a case where the father's in the picture, but in that case, he's talking about a case where it's a question between the father's relatives or the Eim Ha'Eim. So he says the Beis Din might determine that because of the physical needs, it's better for her to stay with the maternal relatives, who are more going to be focused on those needs rather than the paternal relatives. Who will be focused more on the Torah education. The Radbaz. The Radbaz says that it's quoted towards the end of the Bar Hetev, I believe, quotes that towards the end of the end of the Siman. The next question that I wanted to just focus upon is: do we care at all about the ratzon of the children? Meaning that, do we turn to the children and say, well, what do you prefer? Would you prefer to be with daddy, or would you prefer to be with mommy? So there, it seems again that since there was sort of a starting point that a father has all the responsibility, if a daughter says that she wants to be with with the father, so that's given, you know, a certain amount of preference. You have the case, again, quoted by the Ramah of the Maharam Padova, where the daughter doesn't want to be with the daughter and with the mother anymore. She goes to Beis Avia. So they say, Kal v'chomer, if the father's alive and she wants to go to the father, the Gra quotes this in Sif Katan Yud Gimel, if the daughter says that's where she wants to go. So we take that very seriously. The next consideration is whether the child has sufficient maturity to make this determination. The Radva is when he's talking about the case of the mother taking the daughter away and so forth, says, well, yeah, this is all talking about when she's a katana. When she's a gedayla, it's dependent upon her das. However, he says that in the case where the mother is a prutza, so then we would not listen even to the daughter, because then we have an objective standard that we're simply not providing the right environment. It's not a question of preferences. It's a question of achieving our basic objective altogether. Rav Batsri says in his sefer, just a sort of a reasonable, a commonsensical approach, he says that we don't pay attention to what they say when they don't have sufficient maturity, because what he says is that parents often play the children against each other, that they're very out to get each other, so they will try to maneuver the children in different directions and get the children to make certain statements or express certain preferences or even to have certain jaundiced opinions. And therefore, you can't take into account that seriously what they say when they're younger, but when they're older and understand more of what they're saying, you have to take that into consideration. We've had that at the Beis Din on various occasions where we said the custody will be such and such. The children, well, these children will be the father, these with the mother, and then we've had, and the father will provide the child support, you know, to the mother. And then I remember I had one case where one child after another, you know, came into the Beis Din to declare that they weren't living with the mother anymore. They were living with the father. They were already above the age of 13, 12. They were gedolim. They were able to express themselves. And they said that they're not getting the support because the mother's getting all the money and they're living with the father. And they would like the Beis Din to reconsider. We wouldn't change the allocation until we spoke to the children themselves and had them appear, you know, before the Beis Din. The Mabit just says, again, I guess, similar to what the Tzitz Eliezer rules, he says that you can't force a son to be with a father, but he doesn't get mizonos if he doesn't want to be with a father. Nachlas Tzvi says that in his case, in addition to his other shikulim, the son himself indicated that he wanted to be with the mother, even though the son was only 6 years old. He said that sometimes you can reach what's known as a ratzon amiti, what is a, you know, clear, well-founded premise, even for a child who is a minor. And if you have a clear, well-founded premise, so then, you know, there isn't an absolute cutoff date. That you don't listen, you know, until they're exactly 13 years old or until the daughter's 12. It depends on the maturity of the child, the circumstances, the indications that they know what they're saying. And therefore, you don't automatically discount in every single case. It has to really be determined very much on a case by case basis. Do you take into account a remarriage? So it's explicit that we say that, you know, in the Gemara, that even if the mother remarries, she still, you know, she still gets the mizonos for her daughter. But does that mean that it doesn't play a factor in terms of custodial determinations? So the Pischei Choshen makes a comment. I didn't see anybody else make this comment. Everybody, you know, has something to contribute based on their experiences and observations. He says sometimes you have the Cinderella problem. He didn't describe it as the Cinderella problem, but sometimes when step-parents enter into the picture, things get a lot more complicated, and it sometimes very much changes the dynamics of the situation. So what appeared to be in the best interest before sometimes is not in the best interest if there's not a healthy relationship with a step-parent. Sometimes a step-parent can make it much healthier. You talk about cases where a father wasn't able to properly take care of his sons when he was alone and he got remarried and he was able to take better care. But it's really very much a case-by-case determination when step-parents enter into the picture. Can there be mechila? So everybody says absolutely not. The Mabit Chelek Beis Simon Samach Beis talks about a case where the mother said it's okay, you can have the daughters, and then she changed her mind. So she has the right to change her mind because it's not about her zechuyot and whether it's a valid mechila or not. It's about the zechus habas. The bas will have a better atmosphere in terms of having the tznius education of a bas yisrael if she's with her daughter. And therefore, at any point in time in which the mother is prepared to take in the daughter, then she has the right to do so. Now, of course, A lot of that may depend on the dynamics of shinoi veset. At a certain point, it might be disturbing to change, you know, the setting. But if it would not be a disturbance and it's something that would enable an appropriate acclimation, so then he says, by all means, a mechila can be revoked. The Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva as well with respect to a case where the father was Michael. The Tzitz said, you can have the sons. And then he was Michael that he wanted his son back. And he has a whole diyun on maybe the father only meant till the age of six. But even if he didn't only mean till the age of six, just like Rabit said, that a mother's mechila can be revoked, the father's mechila can be revoked, because again, the analysis is Letovas Hayeled. But I emphasize, it's Letovas Hayeled within the contours of halacha. So, of course, we speak about best interest of the children. Best interest of the children, that they have a proper, you know, first of all, a healthy psychological environment, an environment that promotes the ideals and objectives of a Torah lifestyle as best as possible. A couple of cases that talk about Beis Sefer, that talk about with respect to, you know, making decisions of the schooling. Sometimes in custody, there's residential custody, then there's legal custody. So everybody who talks about how there are bikur rights, it seems to allow for a contribution and a role to be played by both parents. It would seem that the mili d'tznius, the mother has an upper edge, and mili the Torah education, the father has a little bit of an upper edge. But again, that's assuming that they're both ruyim lekach, and that has to be assessed in every single given case. So a couple of humorous, if I can use the word, the cases from the Rabbanut, where you had disputes, humorous, not necessarily in a funny way, but where you had disputes between the father and the mother, a couple of cases where the father was inclined more in the Haredi direction, the mother was inclined more in a secular direction. Father wanted the children to go to a Haredi school, mother wanted the children to go to a secular school, and the Beis Din Paskin, they should go to a Mamlachti Dati school. The Shlomo HaMelech solution, it will make a pshara that they'll get a Torah education, but it won't be too overwhelming. Be mamlachti dati. So there was a case, I think in Ashdod, where Ashdod, Ashkelon, one of those places, where the Beis Din ruled that along these lines, and the Bagatz overturned the Beis Din decision because they said that the mamis just split the baby in half, or split the Beit Sefer in half, without any kind of consultation. Because you said you had to at least bring a psychologist, you know, into the picture. So then they sent it that they did not question the Beis Din's jurisdiction. They just said that, you know, these things have to be done, you know, carefully with consultation with medical professionals. So here it is. And therefore they remanded it. So that, the Beis Din, upon remand, ruled the same way, but after consulting with a social worker, it was Ashkelon, after consulting with a social worker, and then it was again appealed to the Beis Din HaGadol, and the Beis Din HaGadol said, I guess they were afraid of it going back to the Bagatz, they said, going to remand it once again back to the Beis Din HaMikomi, that maybe a social worker isn't going to be good enough, let's have, you know, a psychologist. You have to have the mumchen.
How does it get Bagatz? Is that
on a review? Basically? Yeah, they can appeal decisions because the Bagatz...
Is it an appeal or is it a review? They say it's
like Bagatz claims to have jurisdiction over everything the Beis Din does.
Right, so therefore
but
they...
On what basis?
In Israel, the exact infrastructure is not 100% clear. You know, that's the reality. But that was the course of that particular case. There was another case where the Beis Din ruled that the child had to go to a Mamlachti Dati school, and the mother anyway sent the child. In this case too, the mother anyway sent the child to a Chiloni school, and the Beis Din took the child away from the mother and gave the child over to the father. Then Bagatz got involved in the case, and Bagatz said, we wouldn't have agreed, but the child seems to be so happy with the father, we're not going to disturb the equilibrium of the child at this point. So
he's
going all kinds of interesting directions. The Beis Din of America, when it deals with these types of cases, it will not make a determination without consultation with psychological experts, because you have to take that into consideration, as you see from the Nachas Tzvi. And we have two different psychologists that are used by the Beis Din. One is Dr. Pelkovitz, and the other is anybody recommended by Dr. Pelkovitz. And the Beis Din, you know, make sure to have, you know, a person, you know, of that ilk who's able to really understand not only the dynamics of the community and the manner of upbringing within the community, but also to understand just the basic good and welfare of a child, and, you know, and the psychological and emotional needs that need to be served. Now, one thing that I...
From psychologists, in these situations, typically will assess things very differently than non-from psychologists.
Absolutely.
You know what? The reality is...
Is it consistent that way? Do you find generally they have a completely different world view?
They understand there's a balance between, you know, what we call observance and general well-being. Mm-hmm. Someone who's not observant, well, they never heard of observance. It's only the general well-being. But
we're talking about people like Dr. Pelkovitz who are respected even within the court system, you know, in terms of their ability to really assess the best interests of the child. So of course, you know, you want to have that in place so that there won't be any question regarding the wisdom or, you know, the thoroughness of the determination, but that's obviously, you know, very, very important. What also, you know, has emerged, I think, is that in terms of a best interest test, I think the world dynamics have changed a little bit in the following way. That family units, I think, you know, used to be a little bit, you know, more segregated, even in just the normal world. That you would have sons would grow up in a certain path, daughters would grow up in a certain path, that there wasn't necessarily always the same integration between brothers and sisters in terms of their growing up years. And I think that there's now more of a sense that in many cases it's often healthier for sons and daughters to travel together, and not to kind of make this bifurcation, sons to one side, daughters to the other side. So while in individual cases there might be a determination based on the dynamics of the individual case that this child would be better off with the father and this child would be better off with the mother, even though the others are in the other place, often it is just a lot healthier in terms of the current, you know, socio-dynamics of how families grow up together, for the children to be with each other. And therefore, some of the considerations of a father's role with sons after the age of six are tilted more in terms of heavier visitation than they might be in terms of absolute custody, or the way around, once, you know, the most appropriate main residential custody parent is determined, then the other considerations are mostly applied in the area of having the sufficient visitation so that they can exercise their roles properly. Okay. And, you know, that's in terms of, you know, who also figuring out, you know, how much time should be spent, that the non-custodial parents should also have quality time certain times of the year with the children who don't necessarily live with him or her. But that also needs bisman hazeh to be, you know, part of the cheshbon.
So how does this jive with, I mean, I don't know, it's not my jurisdiction here and not my area, certainly, but I thought joint custody is, at least in Canadian jurisdictions, joint custody is sort of where you have basically healthy situation is the rule. So how does that work? Because you're talking visitation.
Let me explain to you what joint custody generally means. Joint custody generally means decision-making custody. As I said, when people talk about custody in a secular legal context, the main definition of legal custody is decision-making in terms of schooling, in terms of health, doctors, things of that variety. Okay, residential custody is really something else. The halacha is focusing mostly on the residential custody. Okay, however, some of the objectives in the halacha clearly go to decision making as well. So even if you make a determination, residential custody should be primarily with one parent. It's rare that you'll say the children should be half the week with this parent, half the week with the other parent. Sometimes it happens, but it's rare. You have to build in the halachic objectives in terms of the determinations of visitation as well. Rabatsri says something which is very important. He says that all of these determinations are very much in the gather of Dinei Nefashos. And you have to realize, I mean, that these are extremely heart-wrenching decisions. When you're talking about taking a child even part of the time away from the residence of a parent and, you know, figuring out exactly where the child should be, these are very delicate, very consequential, very emotionally laden decisions, and affect, the future lives of the people who are involved in their emotional well-being. And it's just extremely important when Batei Din deal with these situations to deal with it with that type of sensitivity. And what I find works best, especially since it has to be done in a collaborative arbitration fashion anyway, is really to do it in a collaborative fashion where everybody, you know, more or less is on the same page. Maybe they're wrangling about certain details in terms of hours of pickup and delivery and things like that, but where the basic custodial arrangement is agreeable to the parties, because if not, then you don't ever really reach a satisfying solution. So when you have appropriate experts involved, that enables parties to get to the point where eventually they see what the appropriate disposition should ultimately be. What's interesting, and I'll I guess I'll end on this note, that in certain jurisdictions, they've actually expanded the authority of the Beis Din. I don't know if this was a coincidence or not, but we were once dealing with a case involving a New Jersey divorced couple. And they had agreed to submit custodial disputes to the Beis Din. At that point, New Jersey was like New York. New York has a case called Glauber versus Glauber that says that Batei Din don't have automatic jurisdiction when it comes to custodial cases, even if the parties have signed an arbitration agreement. And New Jersey really had the same law because the courts only trusted themselves to determine what was in the best interest of the children. And the Beis Din issued a couple of interim decisions regarding visitation arrangements and so forth, and then the one party wanted to revisit certain things and come back to the Beis Din. The other party went to court and said that whatever Shtar Beruvin we signed is now expired in terms of its jurisdiction. And anyway, we're talking about custody and visitation here, and they don't really have jurisdiction anyway. And the court said, we don't really want this headache of dealing with these acrimonious, really, really nasty, never-ending, sometimes, custody disputes. Beis Din seems to be doing a pretty good job. You should go back to Beis Din. He sent it back to Beis Din. A couple of months later, a decision was issued by the New Jersey Supreme Court. It's called Forzi versus Forzi. That ruled that even though, up until now, we have not allowed child custody and visitation issues to be subject to arbitration, we've changed our mind. And from now on, it is subject to arbitration as long as the arbitration tribunal demonstrates that it followed the best interest of the child standard. We will uphold the decision of the arbitration tribunal. And that now is the official law in New Jersey. So it shows that if you're responsible, you do your job, don't worry so much about the limitations of Dina de Malchusa. They'll come around. Really, it's a Kiddush Hashem when you do the job properly and you show how responsible we are when it comes to applying the halakha in what truly is in the best interest of the children.
Both we have a schedule, so next I don't make any more mistakes. The next subway is Tuesday at 3.